right, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, everybody, I'm Delilah.
Hi, Delilah.
I'm just going to read this. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I'm from Richmond. I met Sam through our home group speaker finding person as well. And he actually came and spoke at our home group not too long ago, so it was nice. Let's see. I have been sober since May 20th, 2007, something like that. I'm sure if it's wrong, you know, you won't know anyway. So I've been sober for about, it's not 2007, 2011. I knew there was something wrong with that. 2011. Been sober for about 5 and a half years. Working on 6 here. I have a sponsor. Actually went to a meeting with her on Friday. One of her sponsees was picking up 7 years, so we all went, filled the place. It was nice. So I saw her on Friday, and my home group is Into Action, and we meet Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 in south side of Richmond. You're welcome to come and check it out. It's a pretty awesome meeting. So a little bit about me. I grew up in Boise, Idaho. I was never, like, my family doesn't have a drinking problem. Like, nobody. I'm like the lone wolf, literally. Nobody on my mom's side. Nobody on my dad's side. I'm just kind of a loner in that, which is fine. You know, sometimes I hear it really runs in families. That didn't happen in my case. I did grow up feeling kind of apart from everyone else, you know, kind of just not really part of, even in my own home, even in my own family. I grew up in a very religious household that was also very abusive. It was, I call it a cult. It was kind of a cult. we kind of did things very different. Everything was against my religion. I couldn't eat this. I couldn't eat that. Couldn't do this, couldn't do that. It's all against my religion. So I use that as a joke now. If I don't want to do something, oh, that's against my religion. That way, no, oh, I can't do that. It's against my religion. Because I grew up saying it so much. It was kind of interesting. We couldn't do school activities because we went to church on Saturdays. So Friday night at sundown, we had to stop doing everything. So we couldn't do activities in school because most of those are on Fridays and Friday nights and Saturdays. So we grew up... everything was in this church. And part of the other thing with the church was that you were all going to die, and I was going to be fine. And that was very hard for me to live with, because you all seemed so nice. And I didn't, you know, I didn't feel like I was doing that well with all of this, and yet you were all going to be ashes, and I was going to be fine. And I had a very hard time with that. Growing up, it was we didn't keep Christmas, we didn't keep Valentine's Day, we didn't keep anything except Thanksgiving, so that's my favorite holiday, because it was the one I got to do. It was to the point where in grade school, if they were doing a Christmas activity, like coloring a page that was Christmas, I had to sit in the hall while they colored the Christmas page. It was horrible. It was a terrible thing to do. I mean, like, they couldn't just give me a different page to color, you know? I don't understand. And I didn't understand it because I was a little kid. You know, I didn't get it. I didn't understand why I was having to be in the hall while everybody else was coloring. It just didn't make any sense. While I was growing up, alcohol was around. You know, they were always, you know, here you can have a taste of the beer. Oh, that's awful. And it was so funny. They all thought it was hilarious. I remember my mom had us go out and pick dandelions, and she made dandelion wine. She let us taste it. It was awful. You know, that kind of thing. But then around the age of, I think it was like 12 or 13, my mom actually had a bunch of us over, and a bunch of my friends and I were over, and she taught us to play quarters. So my mom got me drunk for the first time. It was fun. And it was actually, I felt like I finally belonged in my own house. It was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, my mom likes me, and my friends are here, and, you know, I don't know. It was very cool. I had a great time, and I just wanted that. I wanted that forever and ever, and, of course, that's not the way life works. So I started smoking cigarettes when I was 10, I have a 10-year-old downstairs, so just look at her and then look at me and be like, wow, you were that old, you were smoking, oh my God. And I tell my kids that. I smoked when I was 10 years old. Don't do that. It was a dumb thing to do. My best friend stole some cigarettes. The only way we could think to get rid of them was to smoke them all. That seems so logical, you know, to a 10-year-old. It did. I don't know. And she stole lighters, you know, to go with the cigarettes so that we could make sure that we could light them, you know, because otherwise we would have been rubbing sticks out there, I guess. So, because the elementary school that we went to at the time had a pool, and so we just went out behind the pool and smoked back there. Nobody ever caught us, so. Really, from a very young age, I just wanted not to be in my own head. I didn't understand anything. It was like there was this book of life, and I did not get it. Or, you know, the whole beginning was ripped out, and I didn't get what I was supposed to do. And partly because of the religion we grew up in, it was basically like the rapture. We were all going to be lifted up and leave anytime now. Look at this world, how horrible it is, all these signs. It's all about the signs, you know, and it was just look at Revelations, and, you know, we're going to be leaving here anytime now. So there was no, what do you want to be when you grow up? What are your plans? You know, what do you want to do in college? There was none of that because we weren't going to make it that far. My brother wasn't even supposed to make it through kindergarten. You know, it was like we were all going to leave, and then none of us did. I'm still here. We're all still here. But there were no plans because of that. You know, there was no planning for your future when there isn't going to be one. So I just kind of grew up kind of aimless. You know, thinking I'd marry some guy in the church, and then I would be at home, ready with the things that are packed, so we can leave whenever this is, you know, just so we'd be ready. I don't know. So when I was 15, I couldn't take the abuse at home anymore, and I told the police what was going on, and my father got put in prison. And my entire family picked up, and we moved to Southern California. I don't know if you've ever seen Southern California, if you've ever seen Idaho, but they're a little different. It was culture shock, to say the least. I mean, I'm from a place where everybody dressed alike and did things alike, and, you know, except for us, we were the weird ones. You know, we didn't do any of that, but, you know, everybody dressed alike, talked alike, looked alike. It was very similar, everyone. And then to move to Southern California, where white people are absolutely the least people you see. It was very, very different for me. Very hard. I moved down there, and, you know, like in Idaho, we didn't wear shoes outside. You do that in Southern California, you get blisters on the bottom of your feet. It's that hot. You know, it's very different. You know, I didn't know what to do with myself, and I felt like everybody blamed me for having to move. So I felt very ostracized from my own family, and, you know, it was a very hard time. When I was 17, my mom just said, you know what, if you're not going to follow my rules, you can't stay here anymore. You need to go. And I left. So for a good couple years, I lived in various places, cars, roofs, boxes, just kind of all over the place. But it was Southern California. Although, just to let you know, it does get cold there at night. It's quite chilly, actually, and wet. Like, you know, I'd wake up in the morning freezing, and then it would be 90 during the day. You know, you'd wake up in the morning, and you're shivering because it's so cold, and you're soaking wet from being outside in the dew and all of that. And then you go to the park, and a couple hours later, you're, like, stripping all that stuff off because you're, like, so hot. So it was very weird. Always had a boyfriend. Always had to have somebody else who could take care of me because I couldn't do it by myself. Always, you know, just kind of followed whatever it was he wanted to do because I don't know why. That's how I was. That's what I did. Then I went and got pregnant. I was doing a lot of other drugs at the time, a lot of meth, a lot. But it always started and ended with alcohol with me. I know that this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but those drugs are part of my story. I basically did anything that you had and would give to me, whatever it was. Didn't matter. whatever. You got it? That's great. Cigarettes, booze, any kind of drug, just whatever. I just did not want to be in my head. I just didn't want to be here anymore. So I got pregnant with my oldest, who will be 24 next month, and she is amazing. But because I was pregnant with her, I stopped doing the meth and I stopped all that, and I finally started getting some weight back on and, you know, looking like a human again and instead of a scarecrow. And she was a very healthy baby. Go figure. I don't know how I did that. There was nothing that I did, really. I mean, I ate, you know, did all that. I did the best I could, I guess, with it. I did, you know, prenatal vitamins and checkups and all that stuff because I was on the medical stuff down there. So it was pretty easy to get, you know, what I needed to do for that. So I got pretty lucky. She was born very healthy and wonderful, but as soon as she was born, I was back at it. I was back at the drugs and the alcohol and the staying up till all hours. By the time she was two, she could get up, turn the TV on, start the VCR, and it was Lion King that sucker would play all the way to the end, and then it would automatically rewind and start over again. And I don't know how many times she watched that thing before I got up in the morning because I wasn't getting up. Then I ended up moving back to Idaho from Southern California, and then I moved back to California again. Then I moved back to Idaho again. It was, you know, geographical, trying to fix things geographically. It never worked, of course. We all know this doesn't work. It's a moving about thing. It doesn't really work. When we got to California the last time, I picked up a guy and moved him to Idaho with us. He was from Russia. So now he's in Boise, Idaho. Go figure. Actually, it's Nampa, Idaho. It's right outside of Boise, but nobody's ever heard of Nampa, so I just say Boise. So we bought a house. We ended up having a kid. He did not want any children, so the whole time I was pregnant with my son, my husband at the time was like, "I'm going to leave you. I don't want to do this. You basically conned me into this. You got pregnant. Your problem." He was going to leave me. I was like, "Whatever." You know, finally, I was like, "You know what? If you want to go. Just make up your mind. Just do it." So we had my son, and the guy stayed. And then when my son was about 7 or 8, I couldn't take married to this guy anymore, so I ran away. And I got sober for the first real time. Back up real quick. When I was in Southern California, I was drinking a lot with my friends, and I was living on the streets. And they took me to an AA meeting. I did not realize till years later that my drinking buddies took me to AA. That's pretty bad. You really need something. My drinking friends took me to AA. They said, "Wow." And that was when I was 17. And I didn't get this, you know, till 5 years ago. So I did get sober for a little while in Idaho and, you know, started working the steps, had a sponsor, had a home group, was doing service work. And got through about step 4 and then just kind of stopped, met another guy. It's always a guy with me. It sucks. Met another guy and in AA this time and thought, well, this is perfect because he gets it. You know, I get it. We get it. Well, within a couple of, you know, months of knowing each other, we were back out drinking and drugging again. And he was a meth dealer, cook. It was horrible. It was the worst 5 years of my life. If it weren't for the two people downstairs, it would have been all for nothing. But I got two little people out of it, which was nice. Some days. Most of the time. Yeah. Most of the time it's not. But that marriage was extremely abusive. Both sides of the fence. I'm not going to say it was all on him. I was not exactly the model wife either. Finally he got arrested and I got away from him, and instead of doing my norm, which was finding another guy and figuring out how to conform to whatever it is he wanted, I just stopped. I just stopped having guys in my life for a while, and I didn't really swear off. I just kind of didn't, you know, I just kind of, I don't really want to be with anybody right now. Which was very weird for me because I don't think that I had not had a boyfriend in my life since I was like 12. Like from 12 on, I had a boyfriend all the time. Like, and it was trying to figure out whatever it was he wanted me to be. That's what I was, that was my job. So after I got rid of the second husband, I had a guardian ad litem because the circumstances of his arrest were not pretty. And so we ended up having to go to court, and I got a guardian ad litem watching over the kids, and, you know, had to have court papers signed by AA, and I was going to AA and, you know, doing all of that. And I knew AA was there because, you know, my friends brought me when I was 17. I knew what AA was. And it's funny how you remember just the old guys. Like, everybody says that. It's old guys drinking coffee. It's not all old guys in here. I hate to break it to you. Although there are some. I'm just going to tell. Okay. So I went back to AA because the court told me to. And, you know, I knew that it had worked in the past. But I was still drinking. Then I managed to string together about 40, I think it was like 42 days of sobriety. I had a sponsor, had a home group, all that stuff, you know, all the stuff that I'd learned before. And it was really white knuckle, this whole 40 some days. It was really just, I was white knuckling the whole time. And something happened with the court situation, and I ended up getting drunk. And in the process of that, I called the neighbors. And I was like, I need weed. And they were like, we don't smoke weed. Why are you calling us? So, yeah. I called a non-smoking. I mean, I'm in a trailer park, for gosh sakes. You should all do that. You know, in my experience. Yeah, we did. You're next door. You should, too. I don't know. Yeah, so I called the neighbors and asked them for substances that they didn't have. I got really, really drunk that night, and I'm a blackout drinker. That's how I always drink. I drank two blackout. That was my whole goal, was to just not be in the zip code right here. Didn't want to be here. So I got really, really drunk and woke up the next morning and could not find my glasses and my book. Well, I'm always reading something, and I can't see without these, like, literally cannot see much of anything without them, can't drive without them, can't read without them, can't see much of anything without them. And for some reason, that, after all of this other crap that had happened to me, you know, mom tells me I can't live there anymore, ex-husband, you know, now ex-husband beats the crud out of me, none of that got through my thick skull, but losing my glasses, that got through to me. For some reason, I couldn't tell you why, but that broke through this shell of a head of mine and went, I don't want to do this anymore. I do not want to be like this any longer. I just don't want to do this anymore. So I sat there on the couch that whole day on the 20th of May, and, you know, I sat there and just thought, and, you know, everything was going on around me. The TV was on, all of this. I wasn't listening to any of it. Wasn't dealing with any of it. I was just kind of inside for the first time probably ever in my life, and realized that I did not want to be the person that calls the people next door who don't use drugs and ask them for drugs. I just don't want to do that kind of thing anymore. I don't want to remember snippets of last night and be so ashamed that I can't even hold my head up anymore. You know, I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, that's what finally sunk into me. So I started going to AA, got a new sponsor, got a home group, got a service position, you know, did all that stuff. And I didn't have a car at the time, and I worked 45 minutes from my house. But I had started a carpool when I did have a car. So all of the lovely ladies that were carpooling with me kept me on, even though I didn't have a car. Because we used to just switch off, you know, I'll drive one day, you drive the next kind of thing. That way we didn't have to go, here's $5 for gas, you know, kind of thing. So it was really nice. You know, I had a lot of people helping me out, but it was kind of hard to get to meetings. So I had to get to know people. And my sponsor said that I had to call her and two other people in the rooms every day. And one day I'm sitting at the commuter lot waiting for the rest of my carpool people to get there. And I called my sponsor. I said, you know, I'm really sorry. I haven't been calling you like I should. You know, I haven't been calling the people like you told me to. But, you know, I just don't have enough minutes on my phone. I don't have any time. You know, I have this, I have that, all these lovely excuses, you know, all these reasons that I can't do things. And she said, look, Delilah, this is where you're at. You're either going to get in this thing and you're going to get sober, or you're going to drink again. Right now you have that choice. Soon you're not going to have a choice. Scared the crap out of me. Scared me so bad. I was like, ah, okay. Started making phone calls from the work phone because I could, you know, they had a phone that you could call out on in the back, you know, started going back there, but it wasn't as convenient as my cell phone. So, you know, that kind of thing. Started making phone calls, started getting rides to meetings, started, you know, and in Stafford, which is where all this, you know, new sobriety started. In Stafford, I actually, there was no daycare. There was no meetings with daycare. So I ended up going and taking my kids with me to the meetings. I'd bring my laptop and I'd give them the earbuds, one in each kid's ear, and they'd watch movies during the meeting. And, you know, they were very intrusive and interrupty, and, you know, I mean, the little one was only one, you know, like 2 years old at the time. So, you know, it's kind of hard to keep a 2-year-old sitting still for a whole movie. But we managed it, you know, and the people up there were just wonderful, you know, about it. And, you know, then I started getting some of the ladies in the rooms to help by watching my kids, you know, a couple nights a week so that I could go to a meeting without them, you know, stuff like that. Then about 2 years into my sobriety, my job decided to close the office that I was in, and I had to find a new place. I interviewed for a position down here in Richmond, and I ended up getting it. And then started from July through February of that following year, I commuted from Stafford to Richmond every day, 5 days a week. It was awful. It was awful. With 2 little kids at home, so I couldn't just, you know, not go home at night. It would have been nice to just rent a room out here, and, you know, but no. Kids kind of need you more than that. And I couldn't find anybody to keep them that long. So I ended up, you know, doing a lot of driving. It was a really, really difficult time. But I found a place out here, and we moved here that February. And the meetings that I had gone to before I moved, when I was still commuting, were a lot different than the meetings that I go to now. First off, they had to have daycare when I moved down here. And then, and that was actually what really brought me to the meeting that is my home group now, is they had daycare and it worked with my schedule. You know, it's that easy, simply that easy. I am now the secretary of my home group right now. We do a lot of service. We go to Tucker's, which is the, you know, check-in hospital detox place. We go there once a week on Saturdays. We have a group phone where nurses and doctors from the hospital call us if they have a patient that checks in and needs, wants somebody from AA to come talk to them. We have, you know, so we do that. So we go to the hospital and visit people. We go to McGuire's Veterans Hospital. I'm actually on the PI committee, which is public information, and we have the website, we have the phone, we have signs on the city bus. We have a TV show that we do twice a year where the backs of our heads get really famous. Probably, you know, 12 people watch it, but whatever. We're getting out there. And you can actually watch that this April. It's Tuesday nights, April 18th to May something. It's like six consecutive Tuesdays. Anyway, you can watch the backs of our heads get all famous. You'd be like, oh, I recognize her head. No, just kidding. I haven't done it yet because it's hard for me to find a babysitter that late at night. So, I do a lot of service work, and honestly, I don't do it for those other people. I really do it for me. I do it so that I stay sober today, because I cannot. The minute that I get back into this zip code right here, I am lost. I am completely lost. I have a very hard time still being in my own head. It's a very dangerous place to be. Very dangerous. So I try to get out of it as much as I can. And, you know, we have a lot of good sobriety at my meeting, and we have a lot of love and support there, which is awesome. And I see that you guys have that here too, which is really awesome. And I love to think about the fact that there are rooms all over the city, all over the world, that you can get that no matter where you go. I know that when I first got sober in Nampa, in Idaho, you know, that I was in like a clubhouse type meeting, you know, where the doors were open from, you know, 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. or whatever, you know, and you could go in there at any time of the day and have a cup of coffee and talk with another alcoholic, and it was really nice. And they have that here too, and it's such a nice place to be. I'm almost glad now I'm an alcoholic. Like, I have a family for the first time in my life. I have a real family. You know, around Christmas, my sister lives up in Fredericksburg. Around Christmas, I was telling some of my friends that, you know, I might go to my sister's for Christmas Eve, and they're like, "You have a sister?" Nobody even knows, because like, we're that close, and we're not that close. It's, you know, it's always just work with my family. It's always work. And I mean, I love my family, and they're irreplaceable. But I also have still a very hard time with them. You know, I have a lot of work to do still, and I'm okay with that, because I also have time to do that now, you know, and an avenue to do that. When a few months ago, my sponsor was in Southern California, and she actually got hit by a car and ended up in the hospital, and, you know, have to have surgery on her leg, and, you know, it's been a rough road for her, but I'm able to be there for her, and I'm able to, you know, even if it's just calling and checking in, hey, how you doing, that helps, you know, it helps her, it helps me, it's really awesome, to be able to be part of her life like that, you know, and be able to help out. You know, I actually have a roommate now that I did not know was in the rooms until after she moved in and found out, oh, so that's why we clicked. You're an alcoholic too. That's great. So that's been really nice. You know, and I do a lot of praying. I do a lot of calling people. I send out funny little texts every once in a while. you know, I have a very, very busy, busy life. And I'm glad for that now, because it's less time in my own head if I'm doing things, especially when I'm doing them for other people. Started to kind of get on a little health kick. No, it's not from New Year's. It's from all the year, you know. Finally starting to think about me and taking care of myself. I think it's partly because, you know, I don't have any little people anymore. I was telling somebody before the meeting, this is the first time in 23 years that I've had no children under the age of 7. It's a long time to have little kids. It's a long time. Don't do it that way. It's exhausting. You know, they always say if that last one was my first one, I never would have had any more. Yeah, that's my last one. She just has a lot of energy. She's a great kid. She just has a lot of energy. And she just saps me it's so hard to keep up with her. But she's a great kid. I got very, very lucky with all of my kids. With my 10-year-old, I actually used meth and drank while I was pregnant with her. And you would not be able to tell that she's here. So if you see her after, you can be like, wow, that's amazing. Because, and I don't know how that happened, you know. There are lots of people who didn't get that lucky. And so I'm very, very blessed that I got to have a very healthy child, even though I did not take care of her very well at first. I'm going to spend a lot of my adult life trying to make up for the way I raised my two oldest kids, because I didn't really raise them. I was just kind of in the same house as them most of the time. A lot of my time was spent, you know, figuring out how to get the next drink, getting the next drink, smoking the next thing, whatever, you know. And I remember when my oldest was in grade school, she'd be like, "You're supposed to take us down to the school tonight for blah, 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 blah." And I was like, I already smoked a bowl. Oh, well, let's go anyway. And I'd be going to the school with her stoned. And thinking now, like, oh, my God, like all those people knew. They could tell. I mean, come on. They could totally tell that I was stoned. It's not like, you know, I had some kind of plastic thing over my face where they couldn't see. They could totally tell. And just my poor children. And, you know, just thinking about those things makes me want to redouble my efforts now to ensure that I don't live that kind of life. And I want to be a good example for my younger two, and show my older two that it is possible to do this. I kind of skipped over when my son was about seven, I was homeless again in Idaho with a baby, the 10-year-old now. And I didn't know where to go and I didn't know what to do. So my sister had called and said, why don't you move out here to Virginia? You can get on your feet, you can get away from him, you know, and get yourself together. So I moved out here, and then after he got out of prison, he followed me. So I ended up back in his clutches again. So it was, but right now my son is 17 and he's dropped out of high school and doesn't know what he's going to do with his life. And he's in a very, very difficult position, and a position that I myself was in some 27 years ago. And all I can do is be there for him. And I can't be his higher power. To him, no matter what I say now and no matter what he really understands now, I left him in Idaho when he was seven with his dad. I left him. So to him, his mom abandoned him. No matter what I say, no matter what he understands now about why I left and how I left and all of that stuff, no matter any of that, his mom still left him in a different state. And now, all these years later, I see him making the same mistakes. It's very hard. And it'd be easy to just blame my ex-husband. Well, you know, he should have done this better. He should have done that better. But being a single mom, I know that it is not always as easy as that. And sometimes your best sucks. But that also does kind of make me understand my mom and my dad a little better as well. Sometimes their best sucked. But stepping back and making sure that I allow my son's higher power to be his higher power and I just be his mom is something that I'm still struggling with, but I am trying to do. I try to, you know, give him advice or help him with what he needs help with right now, you know, offer suggestions, and then be there to listen. When you're so far away from your kid, it's so hard. It's just very, very hard to, it's not like I could tell him you should do it this way, you should do it that way. I didn't do any better, you know, and I know that never worked with me. My mom told me that a lot. Well, you should do this. Well, you should do that. Well, you shouldn't do this. Didn't really work. I had a very thick skull. I guess someday he's just going to have to lose his glasses, you know, and then he'll get it. And unfortunately, I'm just going to have to let him walk that walk, you know, just because he can't see either. He's had to have glasses since he was 9 months. It was really cute, though. About the time Harry Potter came out, so everybody thought, oh, he looks just like Harry Potter because he was blonde-headed and had glasses. I see that clock not going very fast at all. You know, like I said, I've really gotten into service work, especially here in my new home group. And, you know, making coffee and being secretary, those are great, great things and definitely needed. But some of the best service work is getting into the prisons, getting into the detox center, going to the hospital. That is amazing. And if you've never tried it, I sincerely urge you to sign up and find out how to get involved in corrections, how to get involved in hospitals. It is amazing to go to a meeting on Tuesday and see somebody that you just saw in Tucker's on Saturday, and they're like, thank you. You know, that's why I'm here. It's an amazing feeling, and it's really a wonderful thing. And if you don't have the opportunity, come by my group. We'll put you to work. No problem. Thanks for letting me share, you guys.